Michigan is seeing a surge in coronavirus cases not long after it looked like we were really nearing the end of the pandemic. This is Lisa Berry, and as Governor Gretchen Whitmer recently put it, we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, but we are still in the tunnel. So we're joined now by Dr. Alex Navarro, Assistant Director of the Center for the History of Medicine at the University of Michigan, to provide some insight and perspective as to whether our current global health crisis is now on a similar path to what happened in the pandemic of 1918, or how it differs and how we can look back a year later. So thanks for talking to us, Dr. Navarro.
Oh, thank you for having me.
What are you seeing? I know you've heavily researched the pandemic of 1918. How are things comparing now versus then?
So with a few caveats that, of course, there are different historical time periods and different diseases, although they act somewhat similarly, things are kind of following that same pattern from 1918. You know, in 1918, communities across the United States issued a whole set of what we call non-pharmaceutical interventions, the same types of social distancing measures and business closures, school closures that we've enacted over the past year. And they did so for about 4 to 6 weeks in most places, and that corresponded with the worst surge of the pandemic in the fall of 1918. And those actually worked. Those measures actually worked to reduce cases and reduce deaths. They did not know that at the time. And many communities, about half of the cities that we studied in the United States, lifted their measures too soon, and they faced another surge of cases in the fall. No city that we're aware of implemented the same slate of those non-pharmaceutical interventions a second time in response to that surge. And so the result was that by the end of the fall, pretty much in every state and every city, these measures were lifted. In some places, it lasted until a little bit later. But then the United States experienced, the world experienced, a third deadly wave in the winter of 1919. It wasn't as bad as the fall wave, but the pandemic continued. And there really was a lot of epidemic fatigue, and people just did not want to go back to those same measures that they had before.
So by looking back, can we look forward, and are we learning from the past?
You know, I think we can learn from the past, and I think we have. The reason that we implemented these social distancing measures was in large part because of the work that the Center for the History of Medicine did with our colleagues at the CDC back in 2006, 2007. And we concluded, based on our study of what happened in 1918, that these cities that did implement these measures actually had better outcomes. Now, the caveat was that cities had to implement them early. They had to do so in a layered fashion, so you needed more than just, say, school closures. You needed many types of closures, many types of gathering bans, mask orders, et cetera. And the critical part is they had to sustain them for as long as possible. And the cities that did all three did better than cities that did not. Last spring, we implemented these measures. I think we could have done so earlier. It's a little bit difficult to get people to comply and to pull that trigger early when you don't have that sense of urgency and there doesn't seem to be that risk. We did a fairly good job last spring of layering them. And we actually, at least in the spring surge of 2020, did a fairly good job in terms of sustaining. You know, most places had these measures in place for about 8 or 9 weeks, sometimes even more. Since then, many communities, many states have backed away from some of these measures. This is particularly the case this year. Now we're experiencing this third leading into a fourth surge. And that was the pattern in 1918, 1919. And so I think we've learned some of the lessons, but we didn't keep applying them today like we should have.
Does that frustrate you?
It's incredibly frustrating, you know, and we don't even have to look back to 1918. I get lots of hate mail, emails and posts on various stories that I've written saying, I don't know what I'm talking about. 1918 was so different than today. And that is true. There are lots of different historical contexts, lots of different social contexts, technological contexts, and medical contexts. What's frustrating to me is we only have to look back over the last year. We don't have to look 100 years ago to know what happens every time we've lifted the restrictions with the current COVID pandemic. We've seen another surge of cases. And you know, the writing was on the wall. And yet we have many states that have moved to lift all restrictions. And even here in Michigan, where, you know, we've lifted the restrictions on the amount, the percentage capacity for indoor dining, for example. And we've seen what's happened. And, you know, as was the case in 1918, 1919, it was almost impossible to go back. And I think we're experiencing that today. The one difference between 1918 and 1919 is the reason that they didn't go back and pull the trigger again on some of those non-pharmaceutical interventions had to do a lot with their understanding of how epidemics rolled out. And they sort of felt you couldn't really do a whole lot to tamp down an epidemic. And they sort of did the best they could, given the medical knowledge they had. Today, we have much better epidemiological knowledge about how pandemics work, respiratory pandemics in particular. And the reason we haven't been able to pull this trigger again on NPIs is largely because of the politics. And so we have a heavily politicized reaction to this pandemic, and that has really hampered our efforts nationwide.
And there was no vaccine in 1918, was there?
There was not. There were no effective vaccines. There was some early work on various vaccines. They thought in 1918 that influenza was caused by a bacteria. They didn't realize it was a viral disease that wouldn't be known, and they wouldn't isolate the influenza virus until the early 1930s. And a vaccine was not available for civilian use until 1945 for influenza.
So one would think or hope that over 100 years later that we would be ahead of the game at this point. But I think I'm hearing you saying we're repeating history from what happened in the pandemic of 1918.
We are in many ways, you know, and the big difference between 1918 and today, aside from those historical differences, is that it's a different disease. And so we needed to be even more careful with COVID-19. You know, the SARS-CoV-2 virus is at least, and this is the wild strain, at least twice as infectious, as transmissible as the 1918 influenza virus was. And now we have these new variants, you know, the UK variant, in particular the South Africa variant, the Brazil variant. These are even more infectious. So they might be as much as three times as infectious. And that has, you know, we've heard about herd immunity. That transmission rate has serious implications for the level of that threshold of herd immunity. And so it means that the COVID pandemic was going to be from the start a much longer pandemic than the 1918-1919 pandemic was. And in addition, we know that COVID is easily transmissible by asymptomatic people. So we needed to be even more careful than they were in 1918. And we haven't been, at least since last spring, we have not been as careful as we should have been. And the result is that right now, the death toll in the United States from COVID-19 matches the quote-unquote sort of semi-official death toll of the 1918-1919 pandemic in the United States. About 550,000 people have died in both pandemics. The true toll is likely to be higher in both pandemics, and we'll get a handle on that, unfortunately, after when we have retrospectives on them.
As a medical historian, can you quantify or judge it? Is this current pandemic officially worse than the one of 1918, or does that not really help anyone to judge it like that?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's that helpful, but I would say that right now it's not worse. 1918 is still the single most deadliest pandemic in recorded human history, and I hope it remains that way. But we are currently potentially on the track to have COVID-19 in the United States surpass it. I hope we don't.
And you mentioned that politics is playing a big role in how things are happening now. And as the governor put it, there is a compliance issue with what are now her most recent advisories, which she said were voluntary. Compliance issue with public health advisories. Is that something that happened in 1918? And what's your view on how that's going now?
Yeah, that was a problem in 1918 as well. Now, it's important to remember, in 1918, the nation was at war. And so a lot of public health officers sort of latched on to the sense of civic duty and patriotism in order to push their public health message. And initially, it worked. You know, they told people that the pandemic would likely roll in and roll out very quickly. It hit military camps nearby first, and so they had some sense of what it would look like. And the big difference was that the message back then was, do your part, and this will be over in a few weeks. And so for the most part, people early on complied, and they also felt that risk. You see lots of cases and lots of deaths around you. What happened was that once those measures were lifted, once they thought they were in the clear, and it depended on the city, but generally 2 to 3 weeks, maybe 4 to 5 weeks in places in the Midwest and out West, once they thought they were on the other side of that pandemic, they removed those restrictions. When they saw a resurgence of cases, most public health officers came out and essentially blamed citizens for not being careful enough. But they didn't enact good public health policy a second time. And they told people, basically, we're going to have this epidemic is likely to continue for some time. There will be cases and deaths. It's now up to you to do your part. And people undoubtedly did. I'm sure people have still avoided crowds. But generally speaking, when you don't have strong and good public health policy backing up, you're not going to get a strong public health response. People get tired of the pandemic. Back then, it was just a matter of a few weeks to maybe a few months. Here, we're over a year into it. So it's understandable that people are fatigued with these measures, but we're not in the clear yet. And I think really we need to enforce good public health policy in order to get a good public health outcome. We have perhaps just a few more months that we need to hang on. But these months are critical.
As a medical historian, you typically look back at how things happen. But bottom line, based on what we've seen before and how history seems to be repeating itself at this time, when do you see an end in sight to this current pandemic?
You know, it's hard to know. I'm not an epidemiologist. I will say that historically, no pandemic continues forever. Humans will inevitably get through every pandemic that occurs, unfortunately, with oftentimes, in this case, we know, hundreds of thousands of deaths. You know, the vaccine rollout seems to be going very well. We still have some levels of compliance. I think, unfortunately, it seems to be in people who already bought into that public health messaging from the get-go. And so we do have pockets where we see people who, were fighting against mask ordinances, fighting against closure orders, heavily resistant, not just hesitant, but resistant to getting the vaccine. That's a problem. So I do think that the worst of it is likely going to be over probably in a few months. But this is going to be an endemic disease that will circulate for some time. And my concern is that we may not hit that herd immunity if we don't get people who are currently vaccine hesitant, and especially those who are highly resistant to getting the vaccine. Until we get them on board and get them vaccinated, we're going to see pockets where COVID-19 is going to be circulating in fairly high numbers.
Dr. Alex Navarro, Assistant Director of the Center for the History of Medicine at the University of Michigan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.